Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to yet another exciting, fun edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am your host, Double D. With me, as almost always, is Mark Go Thompson. Mark, how you doing tonight?
Great, man. 1 week back in, now I'm back into a full swing of Hell in a Cell momentum.
Hell in a Cell momentum, it's always a great thing. My goodness, I don't even know where to go, except the above-average comedian, Dangerous Dan Law, will not be here tonight. What I believe has happened is that he is hot on the trail. Actually, I believe he might be on the line, but he got a hot tip as to what Robert Knight's his big announcement coming July 11th when we return, because we have off next week. July 11th, Robert Knight has a big thing. Let me get on the caller here. Now, caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Dan Law, and I can't tell you where I'm calling from.
Now, is it true you have a hot tip as to what Robert Knight's big announcement is?
I have a hot tip, and I have a gag order. I've actually... I haven't been threatened, but I have been promised something interesting would happen to me if I divulged the answer. I made that word up. if I gave the answer away, let's just say that I would no longer have a hero in Mr. Knight.
No longer a hero. Dan, just stay safe out there. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us? Maybe a little hint as to what this big announcement is?
No. I just wanted to honestly come in and say, even though I'm on a special assignment, I still call. Just kidding, Mark.
I see. I woke up in a bathtub full of ice, okay?
I'm being careful. I'm not accepting any syringes or drinks from any strange people. I do know where I am. I am my own person. I'm not being held hostage or anything like that. So far, all is well. I just wanted to come on real quick before I do lose reception. From my field radio phone that I called in on Brady Hicks' show last night, I wanted to thank him for letting me plug the show. And I wanted to just say to you this time, be nice to the Godfather of Hardcore.
I will be very nice to the Godfather of Hardcore, because Joel Goodhart, a very busy man, and to take the time out to talk to us, it's going to be amazing. So, Dan, is that all? Do you want to plug anything else? Maybe that spot you had on Brady Hicks last night?
Oh, yes. If anybody is, if you go to thebradyhicks.com, let's just say myself and a special former WWE diva called in and caused a little chaos.
I personally heard it live last night. It was really good.
She's not with me any longer. She had to go home. She had some more stuff to smoke.
All right, Dan. So I'm going to let you go, but thanks for calling in, checking in with us.
I felt bad. I had to call in at least, be heard. And you two break a leg tonight. I will be listening. And hopefully I will see you next week, gentlemen.
Not next week. We're off next week.
That's not next week. The week after.
July 11th, a big announcement from Robert Knight, and maybe you can break it first.
Doubtful.
Doubtful, but at least you're on the trail, Dan.
July 11th, we're back, and then July 14th, folks, live show.
That's true, and we'll talk more about that. But, Dan, thanks a lot.
Toodles.
Okay, so that was Dangerous. Dan Law, the above-average comedian, if you will.
All credibility of whatever he said went out the window when he said toodles.
You know what, Mark, I have something to ask you right now.
Okay. Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
Anyway, what I'd like to get
funny
in
every time.
What I'd like to get into right now is Joe Goodhart. Joe Goodhart is, of course, what I like to say is the godfather of hardcore. Without Joe Goodhart, there would be no ECW. There would have probably been no Attitude Era. Joe Goodhart was a pioneer, a visionary in this business. So, without much further ado, I do have a theme for him. So I want to play that, and then we'll get him right on. Okay, and now joining the show, Hell in a Cell Talk Radio, it is none other than the godfather of hardcore, Joel Goodhart. How are you doing tonight, Joel?
We're doing fine, and just remember one thing. We wrestled, we brawled, and we did it all.
Now, what I wanted to get into first, Joel, was what came first? Was it Wrestling Radio, the very popular radio program you had during the 80s, or was it TWA?
No, it was Wrestling Radio. Wrestling Radio actually started on WTTM in Trenton. Then we merged and went out to WDVT in Philadelphia and ultimately wound up on WIP. And we had about a four-year run on WIP when WIP had just come into sports. We were on Saturday mornings on WIP, and we wound up actually being the third highest-rated radio show in Philadelphia on Saturday mornings behind KYW and WMMR. We had 22,000 listeners per quarter hour, but Wrestling Radio came first, and the TWA came out of demands from the public for better wrestling than what they were getting down at the Spectrum at the time.
Now, this is, of course, the late 80s. This is during the time of Hulkamania, if you will. People were getting tired of that very systematic matchup. You have Hulk Hogan, who just really wrestled one style of match. That was it. And you offered more with the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance.
Well, I'll tell you, you're correct. It was a combination of things. First of all, people were going to the Spectrum, and what they realized is they weren't watching professional wrestling. They were watching sports entertainment. And it is two different things, no matter what anybody says. And this was before the NWA came into Philadelphia. In fact, we kind of assisted in that venture. But on Wrestling Radio, we had a wrestling store, of all things, out in Bucks County, called the Squared Circle, and it was a store that was open on Saturdays and Sundays, if I remember correctly, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and it was a store that sold nothing but wrestling magazines, wrestling videos at the time, wrestling paraphernalia. Of course, we got into the Hulkamania stuff as well, so we had all the time the WWF materials, and the one thing that all the wrestling fans that came to that store, once the word got out that we existed, is how bad the wrestling was in Philadelphia down at the Spectrum. And so one of the opportunities came along to start a radio show in Trenton, which was right outside, about 15 minutes from where our store was. We suddenly started getting listeners who would tune in every Saturday morning to talk about what we called wrestling, not the crap that they were watching down at the Spectrum, but serious professional wrestling. And we saw an opportunity and obviously took advantage of it.
Now, you stated the difference between what you set out to do and what they set out to do. What was your least favorite part of what the WWF at the time was putting out?
Well, it wasn't so much the least favorite. I think, you know, it's odd to me how all these feuds are settled in 7 minutes inside the ring. I just don't get it. Back in the day, back in the 80s, when you went to the Spectrum, you had 8 or 9 matches. The show lasted exactly 2.5 hours. It started off slow. It built up to the main event. It was pretty much what it was. And people wanted more. I was always one of the contention. One of the things that we did at the TWA is we made a decision that at every card, every show, everybody would have a front row seat at some point during the show. And so we made sure we had matches that were intense enough that a wrestling ring would not hold them. And so a lot of people started coming to our matches because we had that attitude. I know you guys call it the attitude era. We had an attitude. And professional wrestling is when two combatants, or if you have a tag team, four combatants get in the ring, and somebody's got to beat somebody. Pin them to the ground, pin them to the floor, pin them to the ring, 1, 2, 3. And in order for that match to get the public acceptance that it needs, there has to be a hatred between those two or four individuals. And for some reason, when you went down to the Spectrum, you didn't see it. You saw two people who went in the ring, did their thing, and left, and went to the Marriott afterwards to have a party.
Now, how exactly did TWA get started? How did it get off the ground?
Well, this goes back a little bit. I won't bore you with all the details, but I had partners at the time, Carmella and Paul. Carmella, who I still talk to, but at the time, we got approached when we had the Squared Circle out in Bucks County about the possibility of having a wrestling card. And the first wrestling card that we did was actually at the Chamonix High School. And to show you how far back this goes, the main event was Dominic DiNucci against the Mighty Igor. And I'm guaranteeing that most of the people who are listening to this program don't even know who Mighty Igor was. He was the Polish power of the Ivan Putski before Ivan Putski and Dominic DiNucci. When we had the grand opening of our store, we had Bruno Sammartino and Dominic DiNucci both there for an autograph signing, and that was where the conversation started. So that was the first show that we ever did. The second card we did was an independent card, but we did it in Valley Forge at the King of Prussia Convention Center, which is now a casino. And the main event for that match was Abdul the Butcher versus Bruiser Brody. And I can tell you, yeah, you can probably picture what happened in that building. We got all kinds of fines and tables broken and chairs busted, and it was just an absolute great match. And then one thing led to the other. The NWA came into Philadelphia. And at the time, Elliot Murnick was the promoter for the NWA in Philadelphia and got a hold of me and asked if we could get involved with the NWA getting established here in Philly. And, of course, if you remember back in the day, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, this was professional wrestling that the fans of in Charlotte and the fans in North Carolina and South Carolina had seen for years, and the people in Philadelphia, this was brand new to them. Well, one thing led to another, and we actually ran a show in King of Prussia for the NWA where we had the entire NWA card. We had Rock and Roll Against Midnight. I can go on and on and on. And we had a show out in King of Prussia. Well, as this was building and building and building, we finally got the idea of putting together a wrestling organization. And I was one who always believed in telling the truth, and why pretend that you're a national organization when you're going to wrestle in maybe three states? So we created the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, and my first card was actually at Temple University's McGonagall Hall.
Now, you brought up you had some fines there. What did you get fined for? I mean, you mentioned the tables and the chairs, and that seems like an afterthought in wrestling these days. Is that really what brought about the fine?
Well, that was part of it. The State Athletic Commission was not used to this attitude that we were bringing to the ring. We had had some, we'll just say, fairly serious injuries that occurred in the ring. There was a lot of blood drawn at the time, and that was, back then, was something that was frowned upon big time. Well, long story short, we got fined by the State Athletic Commission for a couple of things. Too much violence, believe it or not. The broken tables and chairs at the time, they didn't like necessarily having wrestling going outside the ring, let alone outside the ring area. We brought something to the area that just wasn't around. And that first show, if I remember correctly, it was $2,300. I might be wrong on the number, but we had some substantial fines and charges from the building for the broken tables and chairs. That's one thing I will tell you. Back then, tables and chairs were something new. We never realized that first show when tables and chairs were broken. I mean, we had to pay for them, and that for obvious reasons. Just didn't realize it until after the show was. And here we had made about $1,000 profit on the show, and we wrote a check for a couple $1,000 for broken tables and chairs.
Now, also going along with the TWA was the Ringmasters training school that you guys had, the wrestling school. What were some of the names that came out of that school, and do we see any of these people today? I know we see two of them, obviously, in ECWA, but was there anybody else noteworthy?
Yeah, again, this was all just a culmination of the public demand. One of the things that happened as we were building up this Tri-State Wrestling Alliance was the local talent. At the time, the local talent was confined to some limited shows in Jersey, very small promotions that just, they made money, but they certainly weren't getting the national recognition. And so my partners at the time, Larry Winters and Ron Shaw, and I opened up a wrestling school in Northeast Philadelphia, Ringmasters Wrestling School. And we've had a number of people come out of that school. They're still wrestling today. In fact, Sandman came out of that wrestling school. Stevie Richards came out of the wrestling school. Mike Bruno came out of the wrestling school. And I could probably go on and on. Rock and Rebel, CN Red, JT Smith. I mean, I can go down the line. Jimmy Jannetty. We had a lot of guys that are still wrestling today. And, of course, Sandman made a name for himself in ECW as the JT Smith. Glenn Osborne, another one who came out of the wrestling school. So we had some great talent. And part of the TWA, the real juice, if you will, to that show was that every one of our cards, we brought in major talent that people knew, and we merged it with the local talent, which allowed our local talent to get national recognition. And for anybody who collects magazines, you go back, a lot of the articles about TWA are not about the, you know, Eddie Gilbert against Cactus Jack or the Abdullah Butcher against the Sheik, but we had Tony Stetson against Johnny Hotbody in matches every show that were unbelievable. We had DC Drake against Larry Winters, which to this day are still being talked about. So we had shows that combined the local talent with the national talent. And I got to tell you, if we had cable back then, and if we had the internet, and if we had Facebook and Twitter, and it's amazing what we could have had back then if we had that technology.
Now we touched on the wrestling school a little bit. A question I like to think about asking, and I'm just going to ask you it, is there someone that went to that school that you said, this guy is going to be a really big star, and just didn't pan out the way you thought it was going to be?
No, what's the definition of a big star? I mean, one of the things we realized is with the advent of cable and television, if you're not 6'5", 300 pounds, full of steroids, built like a brick, you're just not going to get the exposure. And what you'll learn from going to promotions like ECWA and the other promotions in the area is many of these guys are as good a wrestler as they can be, but because they're not 6'5" and long blonde hair, they're just never going to get the push. And so we had guys in the school that fit that category. And again, I mean, Sandman, JT Smith, we had matches at the Philadelphia Civic Center that included those two guys. They were as good a match as you would ever pay to see. And, you know, again, they're local talent, so people wouldn't pay the big dollars to see them. But these were guys that gave 110% every show, every night. So the guys that made it, the Stevie Richards, the Sandman, the JT Smith, Jimmy Jannetty's still champion down in Virginia, Glenn Osborne, we knew that these guys had it. You got to package them the right way and put them in a situation where they're seen by thousands of people instead of, you know, 400 people in a room somewhere.
Now, you brought up that you brought in some big names like Mick Foley, Eddie Gilbert was another one. Do you think overall that kind of hurt you in the long run, bringing in those names and spending that money on them, or was it just a necessary evil that you had to do at the time?
No, it wasn't so much, you know, when I look back, having the big names is what got the people in the door. I mean, ultimately, the local town started to kick in. The reputation that I had is that I overpaid people. And, you know, it's amazing that here we are 20 years since I ran my last show, and we're still talking about some of the matches I ran because, quite frankly, I paid the wrestlers as professionals, but I needed to get all of what they had to give. In hindsight, I had matches that nobody wanted to see. At the Philadelphia Civic Center, for example, I had one match of Adrian Street against Jimmy Valiant. Now, that didn't sell me one ticket, although Adrian Street never wrestled north of the Mason-Dixon line except for me, and I wanted to see Adrian live. For all those years that Adrian and Jimmy Valiant had feuds down in Georgia, I used to see it on tapes the same way everybody else did. I was able to bring them into the city and actually give the fans that show. Now, that being said, they were a middle event. They were the third event on the card. I spent, you know, whatever I spent on those guys, and that was a bad business decision. But the one thing that made TWA real was I was a fan. And so I knew I knew what I wanted to see. When I had at Temple University, I had Jerry Lawler against Curry Von Erich. And back then, Curry Von Erich had an amazing reputation of never showing up for a card that wasn't a Texas card. Mm-hmm. And I and Jerry Lawler and Curry Von Erich had wrestled that Friday night in Dallas, Texas at the Sportatorium, and were wrestling for me Saturday afternoon up here in Philadelphia. And I had to pay Jerry extra just to make sure that Curry got on the plane. Well, Curry Von Erich was at Temple University. Curry and Jerry did wrestle. It was the first time in Philadelphia that Jerry Lawler actually used fire, and I don't remember fire being used in Philadelphia ever before. They put on a great match. And again, Jerry Lawler against Curry Von Erich was a main event anywhere except in the TWA. They were not the main event on our card. Austin Idol was phenomenal talent. I would pay him to wrestle anywhere. But I think you could sit back and say, from a wrestling perspective, Austin Idol wasn't the best spending of my money. But, you know, I was in this business as a fan first, and I think that's why people today, I mean, that match that we had between Eddie Gilbert and Cactus Jack is still listed as one of the top 10 matches of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at that, how did that happen in a promotion the size of the TWA? Well, A, it was a combination of, first of all, the wrestlers, for sure, the fans, which are the greatest fans in the world, and quite frankly, the promoter who had the vision to put together matches that were different. We had a cage match where we had 20 wrestlers outside the ring, and the first one to get in the cage won the battle royal. And so you had 20 guys wrestling outside trying to climb up the cage to get inside. It was phenomenal. We had a battle royal, which was a last to bleed match. We had 20 wrestlers where the only one to not bleed was the actual winner of that match. Okay, and that was the opening match of the that was the opening match, believe it or not, for a card that had Cactus Jack and Eddie Gilbert in the main event.
Wow. All
right, so we had the City of Brotherly Hate match between Tony Stetson and Johnny Hotbody all over Temple McGonigal Hall. We had Larry Winters and DC Drake into McGonigal Hall, which is now no longer there, go all the way up into the announcer's booth, two stories above the ring, and wrestle to the point where Larry Winters was actually hanging out. And one time, D.C. Drake was actually thrown off the second floor onto the first floor. We have a video of that. So we did stuff that nobody else did. And again, could I have done it on the cheap? Could I have done it using just local talent and pay them less? I got news for you. Today, there are guys wrestling in the ring who don't get paid, local wrestlers, who don't get paid what I paid them back in the late 80s.
Mm.
So, I mean, did I make some good business decisions? Yes. Were they good financial decisions? Probably not. But, you know, the reason I'm so pissed now at the ECWA and the reason that I kind of flipped and became Joel Blackheart and now we're taking this thing on July 14th to a War Games is those guys in ECWA just took the TWA and buried it. And to be honest with you, and that's the Joe Zanolis, who was one of my referees, Mike Bruno. Mike Bruno started at my wrestling school, and now he's floating around here. He's a TV champ. He's a this champ. He's a that champ. Those guys are in the business because of me. And then when I saw what they did to the TWA, hell, I just found out that the TWA, which used to wrestle Flyer Skate Zone, doesn't wrestle there anymore, and now they got that CZW wrestling over there. What the hell's happening here? So I'm out, I'm pissed, and it's my job to take over the ECWA and bring it back to where the TWA was 20 years ago.
And that's the whole story with War Games at this point. For the past 10 months, I'd say you have raged a war against ECWA. And now you finally have a chance to go back to a very classic match that's not seen very often, if at all, anymore. What are your plans for that match?
Well, I'm certainly not going to expose my plans, but I will tell you this. Chris Wilde, and I think I mentioned this on your show last week, you take Chris Wilde and Breaker Morant, and they are this generation's DC Drake and Larry Winters. These two guys will give you their all, do their best. And now at the last show, Chris Wilde did some trick on my guy and pinned him, and we'll get even with that on July 14th. But these two guys give you a match that is worth every dollar. Where can you go and see these two guys? And at the ECWA, the tickets are $15 if you want a front row seat, $10 if you're in general admission. Where can you go and get the action that you're getting now? Three and a half hours. These guys are putting 30 wrestlers on one card. It's unbelievable. War Games is old school. We did War Games for the years. NWA created War Games, or at least brought it to the front. We're going to take four guys on our side, four guys on their side, put them in a steel cage, and get this thing settled once and for all. Chris Wilde has got to get his ass kicked, and Breaker and my guys are going to take care of business. You're going to get Josh Daniels. You're going to get beautiful Bobby Shields. You're going to get Breaker Moran, Mustafa Aziz. We're going to kick some ass, and Chris Wilde is going down. And Chris Wilde can bring in the Flying Hawaiian, and he can bring in Aiden Chambers, and he can bring in Bandido. It doesn't matter. We're taking over the ECW. I'm sick and tired of what they've done to the TWA. It's just about time we get this thing taken care of and finished.
Now, what if things don't quite go your way? What's going to happen to Blackheart at that point?
Well, see, the one piece here is you've got to realize things always go my way. So we don't even consider that. Look, here's the bottom line. When you get eight guys in a ring at any one time, anything can happen. Your goal is to win the match, but anything can happen. Last time when we had this match, Chris and Breaker went all over the building, into the stands. Again, my old theory that everybody gets a front row seat at some point on a show. We actually got a car involved. And for those who were at that building, saw a car come through the doors. We pinned Chris Wilde onto the car, or we almost attempted. We got two pins down on Chris there. Then it went up to a rafter. They did a 15-foot drop onto a table, busted the table wide open. This was TWA style. Now, unfortunately, Breaker Moran won that. Chris was better that day. But that doesn't mean that Chris and his guys are better forever. The TWA's come back. Chris Wilde has the TWA belt. I am really pissed, and I want that belt back for my guys.
Okay, so you talked about how you would let the TWA go all over the place, but this time you guys are going to be inside a cage. What's your strategy for that?
Well, the cage is the fifth man. I will tell you that if you utilize the cage correctly, and I know if you go to the ECWA website now, you'll actually see a match of Terry Funk and Kevin Sullivan that was inside the ring and then outside the ring. And getting to your point, you use what's given to you. If you watch the match on YouTube now between Eddie Gilbert and Cactus Jack, you see Eddie Gilbert take a trash can, dump it on Cactus Jack. You see him take out a beer bottle and smash it over his head. The true benefit of being with the TWA is you utilize what's given to you. Keep in mind something. Not only is that ring surrounded by a cage, but there's stuff under the ring as well. And the cage is a fifth man. Try to climb the cage, you're falling back down. If you try to even stay in the ring, the cage is going to get bloody. We actually had a match many, many years ago, a barbed wire steel cage match. Picture that one between Abdullah the Butcher and the original Sheik.
Oh.
And I will tell you, that was the kind of stuff that we did best. War Games is what we do. And on July 14th, Newark, Delaware, ECWA, the TWA guys are taking it back. We deserve it. It's ours.
Now, we'll get back with July 14th and the War Games in just a minute. I wanted to bring up very briefly, like your top three memories of TWA, whether it be a match, whether it be a moment. Just give us your top three memories of what was the TWA to you, at least.
Okay, well, there was actually a couple. Well, the first one was actually my first match at Temple University. The main event was David Sammartino against Larry Zbyszko. Larry Zbyszko was managed by Paul E. Dangerously, and David Sammartino was managed by Bruno Sammartino. And that was my first main event, and it was just a great match. And Bruno and Paul E. Dangerously getting involved in the ring. You know, some people don't know this, and a lot of people listening to the show may not know this. Paul E. Dangerously worked for me. Jim Cornette worked for me. Paul Ellering worked for me. I can go down the list of the managers. Luna Vachon, when she was managing the original Blackhearts, worked for me. So I can go down a list of the great managers that people talk about. They all worked for me. And now that I got into the management of the Breakhearts, the new Four Horsemen, if you will, now that I've gotten into it, I learned from the best. I was around when J.J. Dillon was the man with the Four Horsemen, so I've learned from the best. So the first thing I remember was the main event at the Temple University with Bruno Sammartino managing David and Paulie Dangerously managing Larry Zbyszko. The second one is obviously the 2 out of 3 fall match between Eddie Gilbert and Cactus Jack, which is still listed as one of the top 10 events of all time. It was 2 out of 3 falls. The first fall was a pins count anywhere in the building match. The second was a stretcher match, and the third was actually in a steel cage. And it was a phenomenal night. It was an August night, if I remember correctly, and the 3 matches were spread over the course of the entire show. It was just a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. So that was the second one. The third one was something that didn't even happen with the TWA, but I was actually involved with. And the NWA had a show at the Philadelphia Civic Center called Halloween Havoc in 1989. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Ric Flair was the booker for NWA, and they wanted to have Bruno Sammartino referee the main event. And Rick actually called me to get to Bruno, and I was very protective of the phone numbers that I had. So I had both Rick's number, obviously, and Bruno's number. And I was sitting in my office having a 3-way call between Ric Flair and Bruno Sammartino as that thing got put together. That was actually written up in the Philadelphia Daily News by Dan Gehringer, who wrote an article called The Gods Are Good to Good Heart. That was pretty cool. And so having my first champion of all time, which was Bruno Sammartino, not only worked for me, but actually refereed that match because I was able to put him together with Ric Flair. And, of course, Ric Flair, who we got along tremendously together. We had Rick receive a black tie affair for us at the Philadelphia Civic Center, the wrestler of the decade for the 80s. Putting those two guys together on one phone call was actually pretty cool.
Okay, and now getting back, well, actually, I had a question before that. You said you had video. Are there any plans to produce this on a mass scale, or is there a market there? Or I'm just wondering.
Yeah, there's a market. In fact, I'll announce at this point because we're in the process. We're going to be writing a book. We're going to talk about the TWA, and we're finally going to respond to all the BS, if you will. I've read some of these books that were put out by guys after me. It's time to clear the air on some of these issues. So we're going to be putting out a book, but the book is going to be TWA style. We have chapters that are actually written by the wrestlers, chapters written by the referees, chapters written by the guys from Ringmasters Wrestling School, and more importantly, chapters written by the fans. So we're going to talk about what the TWA was and meant to be, meant to wrestling in its big. The second is that we're going to take some of these old videos that we have. Some of the guys are out there selling because they have their handheld cameras at the Civic Center. But we're going to put it out TWA style and put together some compilation of matches. We don't have all of our matches on video, but we're going to be putting those together as well. In fact, we've had conversations over the last couple of weeks, actually last month or so, about putting together the old squared circle, put together a business, and start putting some of these things together and start getting the word out that the TWA is back, no matter what these guys at ECWA think.
That's very exciting, a big announcement, really, to wrestling fans who want to see where a lot of things started from. I just want to ask one last question about TWA, and then we'll get back to July 14th. The last question about TWA, it seemed that you were on top of the world, and then it just ended. What happened there?
Well, it was a combination of things. First of all, I ran out of money. What had actually happened is, a lot of people know in my day job, if you will, I'm a financial advisor. Right now, my partners and I manage a ton of money. But back in the day, I was in the insurance and investment business, and in 1989, decided to go into wrestling full-time. Now, just to give you an idea, in 1989, I had $160,000, and that's what I started the TWA with. That $160,000 was my entire life's work, entire life savings at that point. And when I left the business on January 18th of 1992, I did not have $1 left. So even though the TWA was a great promotion, it was an expensive promotion. The cost of the radio show, I used to spend $30,000 on a wrestling card at the Civic Center. Now, I would make $35,000. But when you're spending $30,000 to make $5,000, it's only a matter of time before the business doesn't survive. And quite frankly, that's what happened. I could have run the business as a business and done what a lot of these other wrestling promoters do and give you some, subpar talent and put 200 people in a room for 10 or 15 bucks and you hope for the best. Right now, the one reason I'm working with the ECWA is they're the only promotion that I can see out there that gives the people their money's worth. They've had shows, they get 200 or 300 people at the Boys Club in Delaware. They run shows in Carney's Point, and they're giving fans, again, for $15, $10, whatever the price is, a tremendous value. You go to some of these other wrestling promotions, and what do you get for $10 or $15? You know, you get, you don't get the quality that we used to put out. So I don't mind working with DCWA. I'm just pissed that they kind of buried the PWA. But it was just a financial situation. I had to make a living. My daughter was born 3 weeks after I left the business, and it was just time to get back to work. And so I restarted my financial services practice, and I stayed out of the business for a long time until I got a phone call a couple of years ago that Mike Bruno was going to start up the PWA again, and he asked if he could use the name, and I told him he could, and then he buried the damn thing. So I've had it with Joe Zanoli. I've had it with that whole crew, even the referee, John Finnegan. I mean, John worked for me. He started out with me, although he had worked other promotions prior to me. We really got Joe over, and we got John over, and we got Mike over, and we gave these guys everything they needed to make it in the business, and now they buried the organization.
Last question is July 14th. We already talked about it a little bit, but what's your last words for ECWA as you try to get the top four guys, their top four baby faces, if you will, and just bury them? What's your final words on that?
Well, they fell for it. We got them in a cage. They can't escape. We're going to take them to school. Look, you're going to get the top four babies, if you will. We're going to get Breaker Moran in the ring, who can destroy anybody. We're going to get Josh Daniels, the true professional. This is a guy who can do it all. Again, he'd be big time if he was just bigger and taller. But this guy, pound for pound, is as good a wrestler as you can get. Beautiful Bobby Shields gives you everything he's got every night. This is a kid that I admire from the minute I met him. He's a solid professional wrestler, but he understands the business. Then add all those guys, and then you throw in Mustafa Aziz on top of that, and what you've got are four guys that are really pissed, but they all understand one thing, that the Black Hearts have to dominate, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And July 14th, if you got $15 left to your name, if you got $10 left to your name, get down to Newark, Delaware. War Games, it's the first time in this area in a long time. You know, most promoters wouldn't even go out and rent a fence because they don't want to give the fans what needs to be gotten. This is a match whose time has come. It's going to happen July 14th, and be there.
I couldn't say it better. Joel, when that book comes out or when you know more information about the videos, whatever, I'd love to have you back on to discuss more about the TWA. It's a great legacy that I think a lot of people kind of glaze over. So anytime you want to come back, you're a friend of Hell in a Cell at this point.
You guys just remember, TWA, we wrestled, we brawled, and we did it all.
All right. Joel, you have a good night, and thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, so that was Joel Goodhart, everyone. Wow, indeed.
Wow.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, when it comes down to the history of wrestling, they just kind of glaze over TWA and they get right to ECW as that big indie promotion that struck it big. But without TWA paving the road, there would be no ECW. It's just as easy as that.
It's really like, I knew so little about it, but I feel like I've come away with just like a taste of what we could really get from him and about TWA really on the show.
I certainly do agree with that. What I'm going to do right now, play our favorite commercial, and
yes.
And we're going to bring on Omega Squad to talk a little UFC.
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment? Well, I suggest you check out the Dream Wars Horrorcast. Isn't that right, baby?
You're going to miss a good show tonight. That's your tough luck. I thought you kids were all about team spirit.
Not only are we going to give you an entertaining show, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no-good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
Find them tonight. Facebook or Podbean at DreamWars Horrorcast, or on Twitter at DreamWars HC or DarkDeadEye313.
To get in the cell, call in at 718-664-9133. Again, that is 718-664-9133.
Okay, so we're back. We're going to bring on Omega Squad, and Omega Squad does have his own theme. I'm not sure if you know.
No.
Yeah, but he does, and here it is, and then I'm going to bring him right on.
Dead man walking.
You've done it now.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce to you Omega Squad. How are you tonight, Omega?
I'm doing good, Dean. How are you doing?
I am doing good as well. I think this is the first time. Mark, have you spoken with Omega Squad before?
I believe briefly on one show.
Well, there we go.
Briefly,
Omega...
but I can't confirm that, Dean. Come on now.
You can neither confirm nor deny such accusations. Now, Omega, I wanted to bring you on. There was a big weekend of fights this past week. I want to go into Clay Guida against Gray Menard. And I said it wrong again. I always do. I was saying it right all day. But that fight, what do you think happened with Clay Guida? Because it was not a typical Clay Guida fight.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, it was not a typical Guida fight by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I think Guida didn't want to face Maynard's power, and he came in with a game plan to stick and move, be elusive, dodge his punches, not give Maynard the chance to let the bombs fly. But what he didn't do throughout that entire fight was he just didn't have enough offense in there. He's obviously very elusive. He's very quick. He's got crazy head movement, and he was fairly effective in that side of the strategy, but what I didn't get is why he just didn't attack more. He just was not aggressive enough through that entire fight, and it showed. And he was even warned about basically running. And you know, he wasn't running the way Caleb Starnes ran away from Nate Quarry, but he was being elusive, and he just wasn't fighting back. And I don't think it was a dumb game plan. I just think he just didn't execute it properly. I think if he had been counter-striking and been trying for more damage, I think it would have been a better fight. And I think he might have had a better shot of pulling out the victory. But I don't know.
Do you agree with the judges then, how that came out, the scorecard?
Yeah, I think I kind of have to agree. I mean, there was a couple of rounds there where I thought, well, maybe it could go either way because – you know, Maynard's not landing, but when I thought back and said, okay, well, how much is Guida landing? And he wasn't landing nearly as much as Maynard was, even though Maynard was missing a lot. And I think the judges got it right. I don't think it was as much of a travesty as Dana White was making it out to be. But you know, Dana White was he wants an all-out brawl, and if he doesn't get it, well, Dana's not happy. But he's trying to sell. He's trying to sell a business. But I think Guida came in with a strategy. I just didn't think it was properly executed, and I think the judges got it right.
So where do you see Clay Guida going from here?
Well, I think Guida goes back and settles into gatekeeper status again. He's got to go and put on a show in his next fight. I'm not sure who he fights next. But I think he's definitely got to put on a better show than that. I mean, he's a draw. If he needs, but he needs a lot of the luster's come off in this last fight, so I think he needs to come out with a decisive victory. So, you know, give him a lower tier lightweight, someone coming off a loss, and see where he goes from there.
Now, as far as Maynard, do we see him taking on the winner of the Edgar Henderson fight?
Well, like I was saying a couple weeks ago, I think it depends on who wins. I think if it's Ben Henderson, which I think Ben Henderson wins that fight, I think there's no problem. I have no problem putting Maynard against Henderson for the title. If it's Frankie Edgar, I don't think we want to go there a fourth time. So I mean, Maynard's waiting and see at this point, in my view. You know, there's other lightweights to fight. I mean, if it is Edgar, then I think somebody else jumps him for a title shot, and he goes and does another title eliminator fight, similar to Guida.
Okay.
But, I mean, I think he's waiting and see at this point. I think he'll be rewarded. I think probably Henderson wins that fight, and I think that he'll be in the title hunt here, maybe later this year.
Now, the following night, there was a pay-per-view, and the undercard was a lot of Brazilians, obviously, because it was the finals of the Brazilian Ultimate Fighter. Now, the main event of that was Vanderlei Silva and Rich Franklin, two guys who really, at this point, I guess you could say, are past their prime. So you have Franklin win in a 5-round fight. Where do you see this all going? I mean, what happens now?
Well, I think what happens is you go back to the fights that both guys were originally scheduled for. I think that they both put on a decent show, but, I mean, as long as Anderson Silva's on top of the middleweight division, Franklin's not going anywhere. He's too small for 205, and he's only going to fight big fights at 185, if he can even get down to that weight anymore at his age. I think you go back to Kung Lee after he fights whoever he's fighting on 147, Patrick Cote.
I think you
go back and just put you had two fights that fell through to create the Silva Franklin matchup. You had Vitor Belfort versus Vanderlei Silva. Go ahead and make that fight.
I think they actually are going to make that fight.
Yeah. I don't see any reason why not to, and I don't see a reason why you don't put Kung Lee and Franklin in there later this year. I mean, unless something comes up, unless for some reason Anderson actually loses to Chael. but even then, I don't see Franklin being the number one contender in that piece there. But then maybe he goes back for a shot at the guess.
And that was a beautiful segue, but before we get to Silva against Sonnen, I want to talk about Tito Ortiz is taking on Forrest Griffin. Where do you see that one? I mean, that's Tito's last fight. I'm pretty sure it's announced as such. Do you see him going out on top, one last hurrah, or is Forrest Griffin actually going to come in motivated?
I have a hard time believing Forrest is going to come in motivated, but that doesn't mean he's going to lose. I think this is very similar to the Silva Franklin fight. You have two guys who are past their prime. Probably Tito more so than Forrest. I think Forrest is more of a lack of motivation than anything. It could go either way. Honestly, it depends on which Forrest shows up. If you have the Forrest that actually has a game plan and wants to fight, I don't see Tito winning this thing. But you know, Tito's going to come out motivated. He's going to try to do takedowns and try to wrestle Forrest to the ground, and it could happen. I mean, he does want to go out with a win. And I don't know if he wants to turn that, what he's going to turn that into after that, if he's going to truly retire or he's going to take his services elsewhere.
True.
But, you know, I don't, you know, like I said, I don't want to call it a toss-up, but I lean towards Forrest Griffin on this one.
You never know, because I didn't think that he was going to get Bader, and he did. So you never know. I mean, it's Ultimate Fighting, so what can you say?
Everybody's got a chance, so I mean, I think that's a great point about the Bader fight. Nobody had Tito winning that fight over
mm-hmm.
Bader, and Bader was on top of the world at that point. And
mm-hmm.
you know, there he goes, and so over the hill, Tito Ortiz takes out a young stud in Bader. It could happen.
You know, we came close with Rashad Evans, kind of close. I mean, until Rashad really started zeroing in on the body. He came really close.
Yeah, he did.
Now, do you think Tito Ortiz is a Hall of Famer?
I think you can't really deny Tito's impact on the UFC in the early 2000s. Pre-tough, I think Tito is a huge influence, and he's still a huge draw for many people.
Yeah.
So I don't see why you can't put him in. I mean, I think he's Hall of Fame worthy, if not for his he was a champion, and he's certainly been entertaining. So I think he's definitely Hall of Fame material. I don't see any reason to deny him, or you know, with guys they've put in there, like, you know, Matt Hughes, for example. I mean, I see him on par with Matt Hughes in terms of not necessarily in-ring accomplishments, but overall impact to the sport.
I got you. Okay, so as far as record, you're not looking at it from a record. You're looking at it more from an impact.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, before we get to Jeremy Oi, who will be coming on very shortly, he is a MMA fighter getting his second pro fight this coming Saturday, actually. So before we go to him, I just want to talk very briefly. Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen, there was quite a conference call this week. Did you pick up any of that, Omega?
I didn't hear the conference call itself, but I did read about it, and it sounds like Anderson is mad.
I have never heard Anderson Silva pre-fight this upset.
And that's got to be a scary proposition for anybody. A motivated, ticked-off Anderson Silva for five rounds, assuming it goes that far. That's a scary thought.
Do you think that's falling into Sonnen's trap, though, or do you think he bit off more than he can chew?
I think that Anderson took Chael lightly in the first fight. I think he came in injured. And I think is it playing into Chael's wheelhouse? I guess, but that assumes that Chael's taunts are going to overcome Anderson's skills. I don't think so. Now but you can't discount the first fight and the fact that Chael dominated him for four and a half rounds.
That is true.
Even going back to the fight where Anderson's been on his back with like Travis Luter way back when.
Oh yeah.
You know, Anderson hasn't really had what I've seen. He hasn't really been able to overcome wrestlers when he gets on his back. That doesn't mean he's defenseless on his back, but as far as throwing him off, he's not quite that. That doesn't seem to be his strength. I mean, I think, you know, Chael's game plan for this is going to be the same as it was in the first fight. Get him down, pound on him, and hopefully knock him out before he throws up a triangle. And
yeah.
I don't think Anderson's going to let him do that this time. I think Anderson's going to be far more elusive. He's going to have trained his takedown defense, which was pretty good anyway. And he's going to try to keep it on the feet, and that's just right where Chael Sonnen does not want to be in this fight.
And I would agree. So UFC 148 coming up July 7th. Now, what I want to do, I want you to stick around. If you have any questions, I'll give you an opportunity to ask Jeremy. I'm going to bring on Jeremy Oi. Like I said, this is his second pro fight, and we'll get all into that after I play his theme music. Right, Jeremy, how you doing tonight? Welcome to the new program, Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. How are you?
Doing great, Dean.
Good. Now, you have your big fight coming up this Saturday. It's at Resorts Atlantic City. Are you prepared? Mm-hmm. How do you feel going in just a few days away?
I'm gonna be honest with you, I haven't felt this healthy since I prepared for my first amateur fight. I fully immersed myself for this fight. I really want to redeem myself for my last fight. And I'm healthy. I have no nagging injuries. I feel strong. I feel fast. And on the top of everything, I feel very, very confident going
now,
into this fight.
Now, you're fighting for Cage Fury Fighting Championships. This is 15. Now, the last one was a different promotion. I guess you don't know yet, but the promotion change, was that like a idea that you had going in that you wanted to do, or it was just this was a fight that came up?
I just went for Cage Fury for monetary reasons, really. Just
okay.
They want to pay me more. I don't know. Because Ring Combat, I like fighting for them, but they were only offering me like 4-minute rounds, which I didn't like.
Okay.
Because I'm training 5-minute rounds, so why am I fighting 4-minute rounds? So I went for Cage. I mean, Cage really approached me before Ring of Combat ever did, actually. But every time we try to set up a fight, something always fell through. So I always did want to fight for him. And plus, I like how it's back in resorts because that's where I started my amateur career.
Okay.
I fought really well there every time. So I'm excited to fight for this promotion. They've been treating me great. And I can't wait to showcase my skills Saturday night.
Okay, now, Omega, did you have anything for Jeremy?
Yeah, I was just looking through the record of your opponent. It looks like Robert Fabrizi. Do you know anything about him? He looks like he's coming. He's undefeated in his pro debut, and then he hasn't lost an amateur fight at all as well. How do you think this is going to go, and what's your strategy going into this fight?
I know a lot about him, actually. I've pretty much, like, obsessed myself over him. I've watched lots of his fights. I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not that impressed. I think the guys he's fought so far haven't really tested him as far as putting pressure on him. And he looks like he gets tired. He's reckless. I'm not that impressed with his stand-up. I think my stand-up is better, and I haven't even seen his ground game yet, and I'm more than confident in my ground game. I'm going to give him his first loss in his career.
Wow.
No one's going to put the pressure on him like I'm going to. I've been training my ass off. I have not been having fun the past 2 months, to say the least. All right. But it's all going to be worth it. I've been in this greatest shape, like I said, since my first amateur fight. And he's going to feel it. He's going to see it. And I'm going to come out of there with my hands raised.
Okay. Now, it sounds like you're taking that loss, your first pro fight, that loss to Frankie Perez. You're taking that loss and you're using that as motivation.
Oh, I definitely am. I want to redeem myself. I mean, people gave me props for the fight, saying how tough I am, blah, 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 but I know I'm... I don't want to sound cocky. I know I'm tough, but I hate the fact that I didn't get to show any of my skills in that fight. So, I want to redeem myself in that fight. I want to showcase my skills. I want to show everyone that I belong as a pro fighter. And I want, more than anything, I want my first win. As a pro fighter. The kid will have to damn near kill me if he wants to walk out there.
Wow.
I'm going full blast with this kid the entire time. I don't know if I'm going to feel him out when the fight starts. I want to get in there and just
beat the living crap out of him, basically, and just punish him the entire time. If I can,
okay.
I'll see an opening, I'm going to knock his ass out.
Wow. Go ahead, Mark.
So we talked a little bit about your fight coming up. I want to know the moment that you knew that being a pro MMA fighter was your dream. Like, what was the match? What was the catalyst that started you down this path?
When I first started, I was still like around like 200 pounds, 205, and I did an unsanctioned boxing battle at LA Boxing in Summers Point. And I thought I won it, but the people judging it were, who really weren't judges, gave it to the other guy, basically, because probably because he was a crowd favorite. I don't know. And I thought I won it, so I just wanted to keep going at it. And I did another one and won that one. And after this, the second fight, I knocked the kid out. That boxing probably gave me the idea that I can compete with anybody. So kept training. I even moved down to Florida, trained with American Top Team with Charles McCarthy down in Boca for a couple of years. Actually moved back there, found a great camp, and they gave me a chance to fight. Fought my first amateur bout, walked out of there with a knockout, and I've been in love with the sport ever since. And I've been putting all my time and effort into this sport, and everything has been worth it so far.
Okay, now you told me off air that you were really because your last fight with Frankie Perez, he's a jiu-jitsu specialist. So this one you're looking forward to more of the stand-up.
Yes.
So. I mean, that's more of what you're looking for rather than getting on the ground. And like Frankie, he was like a spider monkey, you said, because he was just all over you.
Yeah.
So this is more of your preference, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like to entertain the crowd, not by using, like, novelty items, like whatever my fucking hair is that day or what shorts I'm wearing. I like to entertain them by putting on a good fight, a good stand-up fight, because that's what people like to see, and that's what I like to see. As much as I love the ground game, I mean, I love it. I put lots of hours into the ground game. I like to stand up. I like the adrenaline that stand up gives you. And this kid's a banger. First time I saw one of his fights, I got excited, called the promoter immediately, said, yeah, sign me up. I want to fight this kid.
Okay.
So it's going to be I'm going to put in a fighting night effort. Hopefully he does too. And I know it's going to be the best fight on Saturday night. I don't think any other fight can match it that night.
Okay. Now, Omega, do you have a follow-up question for him?
Well, I guess I would just ask, I mean, you've been in this game for a while now. What's your ultimate goal? Is it to get in with someone like Bellator and ultimately to the UFC, or are you happy with fighting in regional promotions? You know, that may be an obvious question, but you know, some people just wanna hang in the low end and just do it for fun. Is it just for fun, or are you gonna try to make this a career?
Well, when I first started training, I was a little realistic to myself. I'm like, I'm not BJ Penn or anything like that, but the more I trained, the more I fought. I would love to get in the big leagues. UFC would be a dream come true. I'm actually planning to try out for Bellator when that comes around again. Or even the Ultimate Fighter trials, I'd love to try out for that. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm reality TV material, but I'm gonna try out for that anyway. I mean, it started off with me just wanting to prove something to myself. you know, like, see if I can do it. But at this point, yeah, I would love to make this my career. I would just full-time fighter, just go in, train, fight. You know, don't have to worry about a boss or anything like that. It's, that'd be a dream come true to fight for the big leagues and fight all, basically fight and train all year round and get paid for it. That'd be awesome.
All right, Jeremy, big fight, of course, Saturday. Is there anything you want to plug before you get out of here tonight?
Yeah, after the fight, I'm having my after party at Diving Horse Cabaret and Steakhouse in Atlantic City. That's 9 South Martin Luther King Boulevard in AC. Come out, have a couple of drinks with me. I'm going to have a couple of bottles. I haven't had fun in the past couple months, over 2 months. I haven't gone drunk, so you're going to see me in rare form. Also, I'll plug Lux Nightclub, which is part of the complex, and also Lucky Dog. They're sponsoring me for this fight. Of course, my gym, Habu Pit, formerly Atlantic City Military Fighting Systems. And Felix Kayan, Brazil Jiu-Jitsu. They helped me prepare for this fight. They're shaping my life right now. And I know I'm going to come out there with a win.
Wow. Jeremy, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I want to get you back on after the fight so we can talk about what happened. The next time I have open is July 11th. If you're free, we'll talk off air, but I really want to find out what happened. But this Saturday, folks, if you're near Atlantic City, get down to Resorts and see Jeremy, a friend of the show, get his first pro win.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed. My fights are always exciting. I know slaps in there, so come in and watch a few good fights on Saturday night at Resorts.
All right, Jeremy, it was a pleasure. And like I said, I'll talk to you off air about getting you back on after the fight.
All right, Dean. Thanks a lot,
guys. Okay, you have a good night now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was Jeremy Oi. He is going to have his second professional MMA fight coming up Saturday, as I said. And everybody, make sure you get down to the Diving Horse Cabaret in Atlantic City for his after party. And that's a great place to have an after party, let me tell you. Omega, I think it's time that we say goodbye. But as always, it's a pleasure to have you on.
It is my honor to serve.
One day you will be ruler of the world. So I know that. That's why I'm trying to get you on your good side.
Yes, well, that's good. You know, when I come into my rule, you'll be the last to die. So.
All right, so very good. Omega, you have a great week. We're off next week, so maybe July 11th. Yeah, you're coming back on July 11th, I do hope, because we'll have Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen to talk about.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Omega, you have a great night, and thanks for sticking around.
You too. See you later, guys.
Okay, so that was Omega. Mark, wow. So we have Jeremy pretty much very confident that he will get his first professional MMA win this coming Saturday.
You know, returning to the first place he ever won, you know, you kind of get yourself psyched up. Plus, he's already got an after party planned. You know, that just sounds like he's got victory already locked in his mind. And I feel like mentally that's half the battle.
It is half the battle. What I want to do right now is play a new commercial because we needed something else, and then we're going to get on Major McClendon.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room on WEXP 1600 AM in Philadelphia and BBradyHicks.com. Like what you hear? Be sure to check out all the other great content available on BBradyHicks.com. In the Room, Between the Ropes, JV Mail, Hell in a Cell Radio, Titus Machiavelli, The Papa Don Show, What's Wrong with Wrestling, The Book Club, Saturday Night Akbaz, The Extreme Odd Couple with Steve Carino and Rob Dimension, The O Show, The Fish Tank with Bobby Fish, and Dimple Date, The Day Dating and Relationship Show at thebradyhicks.com. Great video content. This Week in Wrestling.
stepping out with Sassy Stephanie, WSU and ECWA TV, Completely Damaged, Wrestling Reflections with Darren Corbin, and so much more. Check it out today.
Okay, we are proudly part of the BradyHicks.com, so thanks to Brady. We're actually we're live right now on the BradyHicks.com.
Yeah, thanks, big guy.
I like Brady. I'm surprised.
I do too.
I'm surprised he hasn't called in tonight because we had a 2-week reign of Brady calling in.
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
I'm sorry. It just kind of.
I like that you were bored with me, so you said, "Brady, call in," and then you played the sounder that reminded me that I was being boring.
You were being boring. I don't even know what you're talking about. But anyway, what I'd like to do now is bring on Major McClendon, and here he comes. Major, welcome to the show. You are live with Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. How are you doing tonight, Major?
I'm all right, guys. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing very well. Basically, we got you on. I've seen you. I saw you at the Monster Factory tryouts first. That's where I first saw you, and you were impressive in the round of, I guess you could say, the round of professionals that they had there.
Yeah.
So you were very impressive. Then I got to see you at the DWF show later on that day, I think it was, actually. And I've seen you a few times since. You're very impressive. Now, the first question, it might come off a little odd, this question, but the Major, is that legit? Or is that just, like, your gimmick? I just wanted to know because it gives us a little more to go with.
Well, I really was in the United States Marine Corps. I just got out in 2009, and
okay.
I got out as a corporal. Now, the name Major McClendon came from a guy named Major Disaster. You might know him as Big Country or
okay.
Southern Enforcer. Not Southern Enforcer. Southern Justice, I'm sorry. Southern Justice basically gave me that name. Kind of like, you know, a little carry-on of his character, Major Disaster. So I just decided, you know, Major McClendon sounds a little bit better. But I am legit. I really am a Marine. I did serve in Iraq. I did my 4 years in the Marine Corps and continue to do what I can for the Marine Corps and just try to, you know, give them as much pop as possible. Because I know, you know, everyone loves, you know, our soldiers and everybody who's fighting for our country or whatever, so I was just kind of, you know, trying to build off of that.
Okay, so you are an Iraqi veteran. Where were you stationed during the war that was going on?
The first 2 years, I was stationed in Japan, and while I was there, I went, like, all over the world. It was pretty impressive. After that, I got stationed in Camp Pendleton, California. I got stationed there from, I think it was about March 2008 until I got out in about June 2009. During that time, I was stationed at Camp Pendleton, like I said, and we had a deployment over to Iraq about August of 2008, and I came back about April, so yeah.
Okay, so now how did you break in to professional wrestling coming from a Marine background? Why wrestling?
Well, at first I was very, very heavy into basketball, and I continued to be very active in basketball until about last year. That's when I kind of like finally called it quits. But it was just one day. I've been watching wrestling since as far back as I can remember because both of my parents were like wrestling geeks. My mom loved Tony Atlas. My dad loved, like, you know, Bruno Sammartino and all those other guys. So I was basically, like, raised on wrestling. But what made me really want to do it was I was sitting here in my living room one day, and I was like, man, I haven't watched wrestling in a while. I wonder what's going on. And I, like, looked at a few, like, you know, Raws and SmackDowns and pay-per-views and stuff like that. And what really, like, gave me the confidence one day was I was watching Tough Enough, and I was, like, looking, and I was like, man, that stuff reminds me of stuff, like, we, like, did in the Marine Corps. So I was like, I guess I could probably do this. So I hit up Devastation University, ran by Doc Diamond, and went up there, got me a little free tryout, and Doc and those guys were pretty impressed with what they saw for a person that first stepped into the ring. And then I've been taking off ever since. You know, they've been giving me, like, a very, very good push for someone who's only been in for a certain, you know, for a short amount of time, you know what I mean? And
oh, yeah.
It's pretty good to, like, have, like, you know, other people, like, recognize my work, you know, like Larry Sharp, and his guys like that. You know, when I was at the Monster Factory for the tryout, I got some pretty good scores for what they were grading me on. Granted, I'm not like the biggest guy in the world. I'm only like, you know, 6'3", 230 pounds or something like that. But what I bring to the ring is, you know, it's a little bit more, you know, patriotism. You know what I mean? I really like, I love this sport like a lot, you know, and I'm just trying to bring like, you know, my background, my military background back into the story because we really haven't had any like real military figures since like Sergeant Slaughter and
yeah.
Craig Pittman and all those guys. And I was just trying to, like, bring it back because I'm tired of, like, I'm not going to say, like, you know, like, they're not doing a good job at it, but I'm tired of, like, watching people like, you know, John Cena and, you know, these guys, like, making Marine movies, and these guys haven't even, they don't know the half of it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, granted, WWE is tough to get in, but there's nothing like the United States Marine Corps. So that's what I'm trying to, like, you know, I'm trying to prove to people that the Marine Corps really is as tough as we say. So I'm just trying to, you know, bring that to the wrestling world a little bit and give the good old USA that pop again. I like hearing that USA chant and stuff like that. I'm trying to make, you know, wrestling more patriotic like it once was at one time.
Now, you brought up your folks being wrestling geeks. Are they jazzed for you? Are they excited for you being in the...
Yes, my mother is very excited about me being in the square circle. My father is excited, too. But no one, I don't think anyone's, like, popping for me like my mom. My mom, like, she's, like, bragging about me all over the place and stuff like that. So I just got to, you know, I got to keep her proud. You know what I mean? And also I got to, like, you know, I got a 7-year-old. So I got to have her, you know, look up to me like, oh, man, my dad was really great. You know what I mean? So that's kind of, like, the vibe that I want to, like, you know, bring off to, like, you know, my family. But, yeah, my mom was, my mom's, like, really... She's really big in the wrestling thing, and she actually lives in Georgia now, but
oh,
she's supposed to be coming up very soon to come see me perform next month for DWF. So I'm gonna, you know, bring the A game for Mom Dukes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Did you have a follow up, Mark?
Oh no, that just I'm just really excited for him to be. It just sounds like the energy in his voice just when he was talking about that just really kind of made my night there a little bit. So.
Awesome. So, speaking of DWF, you have a big show coming up this Saturday.
Yes,
can
sir.
Now, what's going on with you on that card? Do you know yet?
Well, the rumor is I'm supposed to be going up against Slim Whiskey. That was one of my opponents at the last show. I teamed up with Slayer, and
mm-hmm.
we took down the Urban Kings, which consists of Slim Whiskey and Black Dragon. I got the roll up and we got the win. But this time it's supposed to be one on one. No one's interfering. It's going to be like hell to pay for Slim Whiskey. He's been, you know, interfering in a lot of my matches on the Outlaws Den, and then like he just won't, you know, shut his yap. So I gotta like put the military boots to him this Saturday.
You have to watch out for that paddle bat he brings to the ring too.
Oh yeah. I've caught the tail end of that. He's cost me actually a couple of title shot opportunities because of that thing. So
it's revenge coming up this Saturday.
Yes,
and that's going to be in Pensauken. Coming up
2301 Pattonville Road, Pensauken, New Jersey.
Okay, so that's exciting. We have that. We're going to be in attendance as well. At least me and Ryan Big Burgundy is what we call him. He's the bigger guy that hangs out with me. So we'll be there in attendance. I just wanted to know as well, as a result of that Monster Factory tryout, are we going to be seeing you in New Moon? I've seen you on the group page, but I'm not sure if you're actually, have they reached out to you to wrestle for New Moon?
Yeah, actually, they have reached out to me about, you know, working a couple of their shows. I got hit up by Jake Bishop, because, you know, he's the guy who books the shows. But I guess I was going to be on the show that was supposed to be on the 30th. But, you know, that got canceled, so I'm not sure what's going on now. So I guess I'll see what's going on for the next show. And hopefully those guys book me like they say they do, because they said they were pretty impressed with what I was doing. So I'm just trying to, you know, bring the energy to, like, at least every Fed that I'm in, but especially DWF. That's my home, you know what I mean? So I bring, mm-hmm. Like, my super A game at DWF event. So,
okay.
I gotta impress Doc and, you know, the management and stuff like that. So one day I hope for, you know, a title reign. Maybe I can bring good old USMC to the top at DWF And even, like, you know, other promotions like Triple WA that I've worked at, you know, places like that. I'm just trying to get my name out there a little bit more to live my ultimate dream of becoming, you know, maybe one day a WWE superstar. I believe I got the heart. I believe I got the energy, you know, the professionalism. It's just, it's a lot that you have to have as a person to display yourself at a high level like that. So I believe I have all the tools, which I did learn from the Marine Corps. So I'm going to, like, you know, bring the Marine Corps to the next level and really put them out there.
Okay, now we are friends with Empire. They are friends of the show, very friendly with us. They've never done us wrong. So if I get what you're saying, you're saying you're looking at Ty Reno and trying to get that title off of his shoulder and put
it
around your waist.
It's not exactly just Ty Reno. You know, any championship is good in my eyes. You know what I mean? It's a privilege to have the TV by demand belt. It's a privilege to have, you know, the light heavyweight or the heavyweight championship. It really doesn't matter which belt it is. And honestly, belts are really, it's kind of like a thank you or you're popping, you know what I mean, type thing. And I'm not trying to get the belt for that. I'm trying to get the belt because I deserve it. You know, I worked really hard to, you know, to actually earn this championship. I go to practice a lot. I mean, I work out like almost every single day. I really want this for myself and for my family and even for my fans, you know what I mean? So I'm just trying to do this for, like, just more than just myself, you know what I mean? Because I know I got, like, you know, younger people looking up to me to, like, you know, do the right thing. You know, I do have a 7-year-old. I do have, you know, the Marine Corps backing me, so I can't, you know, like, fail, you know what I mean? So I got that kind of spirit that you would see, like, in, like, a John Cena character, you know what I mean? I'm all about the fans. I love everyone that comes up to me and says, oh, Major McClendon, I like what you're doing. I'm glad, thank you for serving and stuff like that. You know, stuff like that really makes me feel good. I actually got the chance to talk to Jake the Snake Roberts not too long ago. It was about a week ago. And
wow.
He was telling me, like, yeah, kid, you look pretty crisp. But granted, he didn't see, like, the whole match because he said he's not a, you know, a triple threat type of watching guy in the tag team. So he wants to, like, see more of me in singles action. So I want to get some video over to him so he can critique me a little bit more. But, yeah, I got people like, you know, like Jake Roberts helping me out. Big shout-out to Jake Roberts anyway, WWE legend. It's a good thing that he actually, like, really picked the talk to me. I had to, like, explain, like, look, I'm not trying to, you know, hit you up to get, like, a hookup for WWE. I really need guidance. You know what I mean? What would you do in this situation? I asked, like, a lot of my my top trainers, like, even though, granted, he is part of the Empire, but I really look up to him. It's like Ron Starr. You know what I mean? You can ask him. Anytime I have any type of question, he's right there to answer my question. Another guy, even though he might be, you know, a little younger than most vets and stuff like that, but he helps me out a lot, too. Granted, we're not, you know, the best of friends in the ring, of course, because, you know, we did just have a match. So that's Mark Angel. But Mark Angel is really looking out for Major McClendon at the end of the day. He's putting me in other feds. He's, like, getting me noticed and stuff like that, you know, telling people about me. And I really appreciate, you know, stuff like that. It's like when people do stuff like that, I feel really honored. And when I do get the chance to, like, kind of show off, you know, show my ability, like I did at the Monster Factory. Like, for example, I'll give you a good example. When I was at the Monster Factory, I really got invited by Aaron Ganey. I guarantee you know who that is.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah, so I got invited by him, and he was like, yeah, man, you know, display your skills, you know, show them what you got. I know you can do it. And just from him saying that, it gave me, like, that extra confidence boost I really needed. You know what I mean? And plus, I guess, like, you know, a lot of people like my professionalism more than anything. You know, I like to, like every other guy, I like to joke and stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, you know, business, I really like to, like, get down and dirty. And, like, you know, I have a job to do, and that's to entertain these fans. Whether if I got to jump off the top rope or the top of a building, if I'm going to get a pop, I'm going to earn it. You know what I mean? So
I got you. Oh, my goodness. You covered a lot of bases right there.
Yes, sir.
So basically, the ultimate goal that you're looking for, that would be either WWE or TNA?
Something like that, yeah. I would love to go for WWE, but even if I go to, like, Japan, which I did, I lived in Japan for 2 years, so it would be just like, you know, a re-homecoming, coming back to Japan. It would be pretty cool, especially to get out there with my brother again. Shout out to Ace Custis, former Dallas Mavericks player, to get out there with him again and, you know, like, have some good times. And, you know, and another thing, I love, like, Japanese wrestling. I just love Japanese people in general because they're very respectful and they give you the utmost respect for what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that is even when I was, like, playing basketball over there, like, your team could be down by 50 points with 2 minutes left. The crowd's, like, still up and cheering for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a two-point game, you know? It's like, something, like, as small as that that you don't see, like, in American crowds. You know what I mean? That faithfulness to the team. And, but, you know, it's just whatever. But I'm just trying to, like I said before, I'm just trying to, like, do my best. And hopefully one day WWE will, like, give me that look and be like, man, we can really, like, use this guy as a top competitor. Because I'm not going in there just to be, you know what I'm saying, just a low-entry guy. Even though it would be an honor. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be cocky at all. It would be an honor to even job for those guys. But the thing about it is that's not my goal. My goal is to be a top superstar. You know what I'm saying? And I get a lot of, like, veterans, like, telling me, especially, like, recently, ever since, like, the Monster Factory thing, matter of fact, that I have, like, you know, that it factor. And I was like, you know, what is that it factor? And I kind of, like, learned what it was. It was, like, kind of what, you know, what Randy Orton has, that you just naturally gifted with it. And like I said, I'm not trying to be cocky, but I'm just going off of what they're saying. You know, it was people like Slayer, you know, Mike Lauro, Slayer, shout out to Slayer, and his wife, Denise Lauro, Santuli Devines, you know, she's doing her thing, too. But it's like people like that, Dr. Ruthless. Big Dr. Ruthless gives me a lot of feedback, and it's always positive feedback. Ron Starr, you know, everybody that trained me, Matt Tremont. I got a lot of training from CZW's Matt Tremont.
Okay.
If there's one person I'm going to say that helped me, like, get bone tough into this, it had to be, like, Matt Tremont and Mark Angel. Those two, like, really got me into it. And I want to thank those two especially. You know, they spent their quality time to not get, you know, paid or anything. They came on their Sundays and their Mondays and Fridays to come train me all the time. That was because I think it was because they saw that I was, like, you know, legitimately serious about this. I'm not going in to, you know, have a 50-minute conversation with everybody. I'm here to train, you know what I'm saying? I'm here to bump. I want to do this, you know what I mean? And that's kind of the message that I'm trying to, you know, send to people. Like, I really am a hard worker. I'm not just that guy that, oh, just because he wears, like, a Marine outfit or whatever, or a Marine uniform, you think he's the ish or whatever. But it's not that. It's just the fact that I have a lot of confidence, and I have, a lot of stuff to, like, back me up. It was like, I think that I was, you know, born perfect for wrestling. And the reason why I say that is I think I'm athletic enough. I play basketball. I think I'm, you know, I'm good at speaking. That's just what you do in the Marine Corps. That's the number one thing they teach you is confidence. So I have confidence. Like, if someone says, can you do this, there's no in me. You know what I mean? I will try until I get it done. So, yeah, like I said, I just want, like, a lot of people to, like, really see, like, I'm a really hardworking individual. And I would like, you know, bigger feds like CZW and Chikara and, like, you know, even, like, Ring of Honor and TNA and guys like that, I want them to start, like, really looking at me because I'm trying to, like, really bring back a good, like, patriotism mark on the wrestling industry. And like I said before, like, we didn't have anybody since, like, Sergeant Slaughter and those guys to, like, really, like, give us, like, man, I'm proud to be a part of this country. You know what I'm saying? It's like everyone's losing their motivation after the 9/11. Like, it was, like, immediately after 9/11, everyone was so patriotic. It's like no one's patriotic anymore. Like, everybody hates the country. So I'm trying to bring that back as well. You know what I'm saying? Love the USA. I've been into 8 different countries. And for what I saw from those countries, no place is better than the USA. Now, granted, I might have a better time there, you know, places like Japan and stuff like that, but there's no place that's free like the USA. Like, you know, guys and girls from all around the United States, like, literally give their lives for people to, like, do stupid stuff like, you know, walking down the street or, you know, be able to get a meal, you know what I'm saying, without no one bothering you. And people don't understand how really, like, how hard that really is, you know what I'm saying, to be away from your family for so long or to go to war for 8 straight months. And, like, you know what I'm saying, you only get to talk to your family, like, a few times a week or something like that. You know what I'm saying? It's really hard.
Yeah.
So I'm coming from something that's legit, and I'm trying to, like, make it as legit as possible in the eyes of the wrestling people. So That's why I'm trying to, like, bring a little entertainment to it because people will remember me like, wow, I like that Marine guy. So you know I use, like, the Guile theme when I come out. You know what I'm saying? Because no one else thinks of stuff like that. So,
yeah.
You know, I just try to do, like, I just try to be different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I just show that, like, really, like, real hard work and dedication really does pay off. So instead of just, just because I'm 6'9", 300 pounds, and then I can squash a lot of people, that don't mean anything. You know what I'm saying? If you're not, like, giving them, like, your all and, like, you know the whole thing behind the business, like, respect. Respect is a big thing. And I guess that's probably why a lot of guys like me, because I show a huge amount of respect to every, like, especially the veterans, because I know for sure those guys probably took, like, 1,001 bumps in their lifetime. And, you know, for just to entertain a crowd of 50 people, you know what I'm saying? Guys are, like, jumping off of everything just to entertain 50 people. Obviously, you've seen, like, I'll shout out another guy, Owen O'Neill. He's, like, going through the second rope on me and Mark Angel at the B show. You know what I'm saying? So it's just stuff like that, like, guys, like, a lot of, like, the bigger feds don't recognize. Like, these guys really, really want it. You know what I'm saying? I just hope that, you know, somebody like me actually does make it to the WWE, so I can say, like, hey, I'm legitimately here for a reason. I'm trying to be, like, the big guy on campus, like the next John Cena. Like, granted, I'm not trying to, you know, have, like, a five move list or whatever you want to call it. But you know what I'm saying? I want to be, like, that guy that people look at and be like, man, maybe I should join the Marine Corps and learn some discipline and respect and stuff like that. Maybe that really is what's important to the world right now. You know, not thinking just of myself. Getting myself over, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a two-way street when you're in wrestling. It's like you got to make yourself look good and make your opponent slash partner look good as well. You know what I mean? It's just simple stuff like that.
Major, I really can't say it any better than that. We ran out of time, but wow. I got to have you on for a little bit longer next time because you have a really interesting story that I think you're excited to tell.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. So everyone, that was Major McClendon, and you can see him this Saturday. What was the address again, Major?
2301 Hattonfield Road, Pennsauken, New Jersey. Make sure you guys are there. I will be giving out high fives and free autographs as usual.
Okay. So he will be there in Pennsauken for the DWF Loco show. And it was a pleasure, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Well, you have a great night. Okay. So that was none other than Major McClendon. So, Mark, what do you think about that?
I just love when we talk to a guy that is just so excited to be doing what he's doing.
And he certainly is.
We've gotten a couple people's, like, you can tell when we get, like, a first interview or, like, an early interview with someone, they just, like, they have that, like, they're like, man, someone noticed me and they want me to talk about me. Like, and it's not like a selfish thing, but it's like an excitement thing. It's an excitement level that it really just can't be matched. And it's just, when we get those early on guys, I just really think they're a blast.
You know, I think today you could really say is about guys, at least with Jeremy and with Major McClendon, it's about guys that really want to go out there and make their own destiny.
They know that this is what they're meant to do. You know, like you couldn't tell either of those guys no.
I agree with you. It's not in their vocabulary. They're not made up that way. So very exciting, Major McClendon. I think big things. First time I saw him, like I said, was the Monster Factory tryouts, where Bob Levy was there critiquing people. But my goodness, I mean, he really made an impression. And then after the night, this is an interview that I think a lot of people should hear because he definitely has the stick down.
And this is what I'm going to say, you know, like, I feel motivated. I feel like he really lifts you up. He gets you excited.
He does.
Like, if you weren't excited about seeing Major McClendon, you are now. And if you're not, then you need to get checked.
My goodness. Let me just play a commercial because I after that, I just have to clear my thoughts. This is a new one I just put together from audio of the show. Footage. What am I talking about?
Run outside right now and go, listen to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio! And I want you to scream the whole URL out loud and run back inside before the cops come. If you're sitting at work right now, you're working the night shift, listen to this show, punch somebody in the head and tell them to listen to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
If you have it on your iPod and you're on the bus, just smack,
especially if he's a fat son of a gun trying to get on his scooter, just tell him, you better listen to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio, I'm going to pop the tires in your scooter. Tell them that.
That, of course, was a riff that Dan and I had, and I think it makes a perfect commercial. What do you think?
I agree 100%. Also, one of our many target demographics, people that ride buses, I think.
People that ride buses and hold up the whole process by getting on with their scooter.
Yeah, absolutely. We target them exclusively, I feel like. Somehow, some way.
Do we also target the horror cast crowd?
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
they
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment? Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
I'm sorry.
And nightmare like this one.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking of a nightmare you had like that once, Sideshow Pro this past Friday night.
Oh, man.
Mark, you and I were in attendance. I think it was, to be very fair and to be honest, it was a very average show. But when I say that, it's still better than a lot of things I've seen. So I don't want to just down them because not what it's about.
I'm going to give them a pass. It being average, I don't think was entirely their fault. Because I feel like the later matches, would have been so much better if, you know, we weren't watching them via candlelight. Because the power went out at the gymnasium we were at.
Well, and there was a storm. It was obviously something that they couldn't control. So I think, yes. I think it's definitely worth another try. This was their second show. I thought it was a very good show. You have a lot of – the thing I like about them is they're trying to be unique rather than just throwing out the same product.
Oh, and, absolutely.
I mean, you have a guy like Cluck Norris who made his –
Cluck Norris.
who made his debut. And while his finisher might have been in slow motion, it was still a very interesting – he was in the fun way four-way. Which was Kimberly, Johnny Calzone, Xerox, the door-to-door luchador.
Who I absolutely love now.
And, of course, the aforementioned Cluck Norris. I think Kimberly, you saw a glimpse of why people are talking about her.
The thing with Kimberly is I saw her both ways. You know, I saw her as the manager. Like, you know, your manager vixen style, woman. And then I also saw her in the ring. And both opportunities that I saw her, I was like, man, I wish I'd gotten just a little bit more.
And that's the thing. We're going to go up on July 28th, I think it is, to Jersey Shore Wrestling, or I forget the exact name. But they're in Manahawkin having a show. And we're going to go up there and check. Kimberly's wrestling Mia Yim. And if you don't know who Mia Yim is, she's another one of those women that just go all out. She's in CZW. She actually she manages Adam Cole.
Oh. And,
yes, who we have had on the show. But she had probably her biggest match, the one that people talk about, besides wrestling Kimberly just about everywhere on the Eastern Seaboard. She was also in a ladder match against Greg Excellent, which was beyond words, really. Not much of a CZW fan, if you listen in, but that match was really something else. So overall, Sideshow Pro, what do you think, Mark, of what they attempted to show until things kind of got out of their control
with the power going out and things of that nature.
I feel like everyone that was wrestling for Sideshow Pro really, you know, this is the thing I think that independent wrestling really needs to do. And they do it really well. You need to play to your audience. And let's be honest, Dean, we were there and we were being a little obnoxious. And they played to us like a fiddle.
Well, luckily we were a few rows back because I think a listener of the show, he had he had some trouble on the other end of that. But
that's true. that's true.
That's neither here nor there, though.
But I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, if that's, you know, if you're going to be that fan, like we were being that fan, you know, like part of it is, you know, that's part of involving yourself in the show.
Yeah, but you got to be professional enough.
But no. And that's what I want to say. But then there's a line. There's a line that we kind of saw get a little blurry, and we both agree that that line was very, very fuzzy there, and we both kind of like cringed a little, you know? Ooh.
A little bit. Glasses went flying, hats went flying, but when all is said and done, he actually said he was looking forward to going back.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the thing. And, you know, the thing that bummed me out about the show, and I'll tell you this right now, it's that I didn't get to see my guy Ophidian wrestle in what would be a natural light.
Well, that's true. Ophidian, a great interview, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But he was on the show, and his was the first match when they decided to continue with the show. And
really, the only reason I saw any of his matches because I was next to the ring holding my cell phone up.
They were under emergency lighting, so, but whatever.
Once again, not their fault. I'm not blaming them. You can't. Mother Nature is mean, and apparently doesn't like independent wrestling all the time.
You know what I found most ironic of that, though? As soon as the show's over, they're like, you know, drive home safely, the bad storm outside, boom, the lights come back on.
Mm-hmm.
Very ironic. I also want to briefly bring up, I was at a PPW show with Ryan Big Burgundy on Saturday, and that was interesting, actually getting into southern Delaware to see a show. Yes, apparently...
The deep south.
Yeah, it is. It really is there. But got to see some Indie Roundup members, part of the show. That was Eric Hill and Tom Lyons. They were part of the show. Actually carried the flag for Rock and Rebel. Not sure why they had to carry a flag against a British wrestler, and I say that in quotations, but whatever. And apparently there was a title change, but no belt. But I don't know. I'm not complaining, but it was an interesting show. One thing I do want to bring up about that show is Sienna Duvall, who we have had on as part of the Empire when they were on. She did double duty. Now, she wrestled Jessie Bell in a great women's match, which probably stole the show, quite frankly. If that wasn't enough, she was attacked after the match by Jimmy Dream from Pretty Ugly, that's their name. He called her a ring rat and this and that and was really nasty with her. She said, hey, pal, let's do a street fight. So Sienna Duvall, in the main event that night, had a street fight with Jimmy Dream.
Wow.
And she won. She was victorious after she gave him a Death Valley driver through two chairs.
That's serious.
She really, of all the women I've seen, and, you know, Kimberly, she is impressive because she'll go where she needs to go to get things done. And she settles scores. She wins championships pretty much everywhere she goes. Sienna Duvall, if she's not in WWE within 3 years, I don't know what to tell you.
So that's a little dream match of ours, then.
That's a what?
A little dream match of ours, Kimberly, Sienna Duvall.
You know, I don't think they've ever crossed paths. I think for whatever reason,
You and I, have discussed this a little bit. We think we would love that, right?
I think we would if we got, yeah.
I
don't want to go
see that.
I don't want to go too far into our idea, but yeah, that would be interesting. I think people would pay to see them.
Man, that'd be nuts. Yep.
So PBW, interesting show. They also had Ryan from Tough Enough. You'll remember him as Skidmark.
Yes.
Yes, the blind. I think he got kind of a bad rap because he has a good gimmick. And kind of a bad rap there. He wrestled the dirty dirty Sunny Deeds, who has the $10 punch. Basically, it's a roll of quarters in his hand, and he uses that to gain victory. I like that. It's very creative, isn't it?
There's so many clever things going on with Sunny Deeds and $10 punch, and the fact that it is a $10 punch, and just wow.
You know what? They had apparently, if he was seen using the $10 punch during the match, he would have been disqualified and fired. Now the thing was, we could clearly see the roll of quarters in his hands, but the person who was at ringside apparently could not, even though he was inches away from his hand at one point.
Well, you know,
it's that wrestling blindness, right?
It happens from time to time. You know, you forget, you get overwhelmed by the moment. You know, maybe
it's still real to me, damn it.
Yes, and I it sticks the landing.
I knew you were waiting for that, so
it really built to that.
It's still real to me, damn it.
So yeah, it was you know, for the first time going, I think I'm a little hard on things, and I'll just say this right now. Obviously, if you listen to the show, a majority of who we get are ECWA guys, and that's like my home, I would say. Joe Zanoli, great guy. He already knows that. I've told him privately, publicly, whatever. Very helpful to the show. Got me Adam Cole, got me Tony Nese, got me a lot of guys. First time we interviewed Papadon, it was because of Joe Zanoli. Now, Papadon and I are, of course, on very good terms, and I can get him anytime, but it wouldn't have happened without Joe Zanoli. Mike Tartaglia, everybody in ECWA, and I think they get a bad rap. They took over a company that was crumbling, falling apart, had a lot of horrible wrestlers, and this is as recently as 2009. They turned everything around, have a great roster in there, but the thing was, they took it over from like a demigod in Jim Kettner, and that's very hard to get past for a lot of people that it's no longer Jim Kettner in charge, it's Zanoli and Tartaglia. Now, you haven't met Zanoli and Tartaglia, you will on the 14th when we do the live show, but I think a lot of people, it's just a little bit hard for them to get past the fact that it's no longer a Jim Kettner promotion. And I don't think you can add anything to that.
No. I was going to say, like, sometimes, you know, like, oh, what's it like? It's like a band doing an album that sounds just a little different. You know, like, well, it doesn't sound like this. It doesn't sound like that. Yeah, okay, it doesn't, but you know, are they still putting out a good product? Are you still happy with what you're hearing? Yeah, but it's not that. Sometimes things are apples and oranges, man, and sometimes they can both be delicious.
That's a very good point. But I think a lot of people in Delaware, they have shunned Joe and Mike, and it's a shame because they're only missing out from what I think is one of the top independents, whether they want to believe it or not, whether they want to listen to me or not, who am I, whatever. I really feel when you have the talent roster of Papadon, when you have Johnny Silver, when you have Keikoa, when you have Tony Nese, Adam Cole showed up for a show, when you have all these guys, and like Chris Wilde, and you have just all these guys, it's amazing to me why you would just turn your back and not go to the show.
You know, where are they going that they think is better? You've sold me on this. You're like, in the area right now, it's probably, you know, legitimately, like, in your top five. You know, I know it's your number one, but, like, logistically, you could argue that it's a top five.
Oh, easily. Easily.
Yeah. So, you know, where are these people going? What are they doing? They going to West Virginia?
They're going to Southern Delaware. It's really like going into enemy territory when you go down there.
Like we said, deep south. You know, do they have shoes there? I don't know.
I'm not sure. But my goodness, it was quite an adventure this weekend. And, of course, we have another one coming up this weekend with DWF, the 14th. The entire Hell in a Cell crew will be at the Greater Newark Boys and Girls Club, 109 Glasgow Drive, for War Games.
Can I tell you something I hope happens?
What do you hope happens?
I hope that Dan snaps and chokes Ryan like he's Latrell Sprewell choking Rick Adelman.
I'm not sure if that will happen. It might. It might.
I kind of hope that it like just the pressure just drives him insane. He's just like, why can't you? Well, I don't know why I want that, but I just think it adds a level of entertainment to our show.
It's a little odd, but maybe. I'm not sure if it would work for audio, you know, for a non-visual medium. I think it would be much funnier if it was done.
Well, you know, Burgundy would definitely tweet a picture of himself. Like, he would take the face picture of himself being choked by Dan.
He very well might.
He would somehow figure out how to MySpace that picture.
MySpace. Oh, my. Now, I do want to say ECWAProWrestling.com. That's your place to check out all the information about War Games. July 11th, I'm trying to get all four of Team ECW on. I already have Chris Wilde. I have Aiden Chambers. I have Keiko of the Flying Hawaiian. I'm waiting on Bandito. Bandito, don't let me down.
Yeah, come on, Bandito.
Don't let me down, Bandito. There's another story there.
I haven't talked to him in ages.
There's another story there, but we'll talk off air about that. So check out ECWAProWrestling.com for all your needs to check out that show, July 14th. Are you going to go to Voorhees? No. You don't want to go to Voorhees. You don't want to see that crap. Go to ECWA in 109 Glasgow Drive, Newark, Delaware. That's going to be the show. You can also check out DevastationWrestling.com for more information on this Saturday's DWF card. Also check out CFFC.tv. That is for information for Jeremy's fight coming up this Saturday from Resorts Atlantic City. Now, Joel does not have a Twitter or a Facebook. It's a personal Facebook. I'm not going to give that out. Jeremy, oi, you can find on Twitter at Team H0Y. H0Y. And Major McClendon, you can find at Major McClendon on Twitter. You can also find me at Folsom County. You can find Mark at Go Thompson. And you can find Dan at DanLaw83, or 83 as he likes to say. Whatever. He is the above average comedian. He will be back July 11th. What?
83.
I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, he's so smug with his numbers and
stuff.
His job.
So, Mark, do you have anything else you wanted to go over?
No, I just think it was a really good show. You know, we had a good time. Did miss Dan. I'll tell him that. You know, Dan, I missed you.
Yeah. Dan brings his own energy to the show.
You know, my heart hurts a little bit because I didn't hear the words Kodiak or Bear right next to each other.
You know, Kodiak Bear is actually wrestling at the end of the month in, like, Metuchen or something.
Can we just go to it? Can we just go to it and just get blackout drunk and just, like, think we made it up?
I think.
And then Dan wakes up spooning with Kodiak Bear.
Spooning.
And then he can be like, there were walls, there were doors.
I don't know. Maybe he'll have something for us. I believe Robert tweeted something. Let me just do this right now. We're in overtime, so who cares, really?
Yeah. We're the only ones listening to this.
Maybe not. I don't know. Best of Cell. He was just a. Robert just tweeted next week's show.
He's excited for it.
It's the Best of the Cell, a hotbed of information and learning, is what it is titled. That's next week's show. It's going to be a best of.
Oh, I think it's funny that it's called that.
You're going to hear some of the best interviews. I'm not sure who yet, but you're going to hear some of the best stuff that we've done, all compacted into an hour and a half.
I thought you were going to round it out to at least 15 minutes.
What, just 15 minutes? Have a good night, guys.
Just 15 minutes of good stuff, and then the rest is just, you know.
So like a Howard Stern best of.
Yes.
that's what you wanted. Okay. Now, I think Adam Cole will probably be replayed. Yeah. Joel from tonight is a very hot contender.
It was a serious interview.
Empire's first interview at the live show. They will be on probably their clips from the Valor Pro show. You know how much I love Valor.
I know.
Might as well plug them some more. Valor Pro.
I can't wait till you and the whole company of Valor Pro hug it out.
It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Artemis Walls, not going to happen.
I hope you bring Kodiak Bear to their company and just rain havoc.
Just like Paul Heyman, like with my thinning hairline that I have now with the ponytail.
Yeah,
just
backwards ball cap, giant Zach Morris cell phone.
I'm going to go in there and just cut a promo. People are going to be so confused.
All of a sudden you have a stable of wrestlers that are interfering with matches. Nobody knows what's happening anymore.
The booker just goes with it.
He's like, I don't know, Kodiak Bear sounds legit to me.
You know what, and the fans are thinking this.
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
They're wondering if there's a beer garden outside somewhere.
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?
Instead of chairs, they put out those little nap mats from kindergarten.
Oh, I love it. I love Magoo. You haven't met Magoo. He used to call in the other show so often. But I don't know. Time slips away sometimes, Mark. Time slips away. So if you don't have anything else, I'm ready to call it a night.
Yes, absolutely. Let's wrap this bad boy up in a timely fashion. Like professionals.
Professionals, even though we've gone probably about 20 minutes over what I allotted. But
well, you know, I think so much, that's a professional thing to do.
So much to talk about, though. But, Mark, until the 11th of July, unless you want to, we'll talk off air. Never mind. I'm going to have conversation with you. We'll talk off air. But until next week. Or whenever.
No, next week. They have to listen next week.
Yes, next week.
Are you bored? Do you need some entertainment?